Let's get that IV started.
I think I hear you now.
Let's get that IV started. Oh, they're such sweet little girls.
Yes.
And then, I haven't had this problem for, but you know, we're just gonna have to do it again. Oh, you want to use the other arm, or you want to try here again? Oh yeah. Oh man.
So yeah.
I finally got a port installed, which is actually better. But it's pretty frightening when they come at you with now a 12-gauge needle, which is, as it goes through that, all that muscle and gristle, and down through the septum, and
well, let's see, it is getting close to Halloween, so I guess
Oh my!
All right, so we're going to pick up about. You say you couldn't remember the name of the glass bore that you bribed with the bottle of Jack Daniels.
Or? I'm afraid that's right.
Okay, well that's too bad because you know this guy made you famous.
Yeah. Well, you I guess you're right about. Klaus would. Doggone it. I'll just have to find out, and it could be that even Paul Varels would remember, because we used to have the glass bar come down to the 110. Every time we wanted to, to change some aspect of the, because the 110 had some flanges, but they were mostly glass pieces coming through the flange, and that had to be modified from time to time.
Oh yeah. Okay. Well then, what about this your name?
Okay, my middle name is Throck.
So a long time, I think my first mention you went by Throck.
That's because I felt obliged to use it because I had used it. But my attempts to find out the origin have been disappointing. My mother claims that it was my father who came up with the name. And there's no family history. There's no family meaning to the name Throck. Simply something that my father had seen over the years, and I got nabbed with it. And I was always embarrassed by it, so I never divulged it when I was in grade school. That's what T stood for. I think one time when pushed, I said Tom. So I learned to lie at an early age. But when I got to college and began to recognize that uniqueness was a virtue, I began to appreciate the fact that I had a unique middle name. Mm-hmm. And my mother had actually encouraged me to use it with my initial J.
Okay.
She didn't want me to have a nickname, so she christened me Jack, not John.
Interesting.
So I'm christened Jack Throck Watson, and she wanted me to go by J. Throck Watson, and I thought that was a neat idea, and it was a fun name on which to develop a signature. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, I had to declare what I wanted to be called. And I saw the difficulty that especially Europeans had with pronouncing Throck, the TH problem.
Mm.
So I backed off to Jack, in deference to them in large measure. But many of my close friends affectionately picked up on Throck and still call me Throck, including Michael Grayson.
Yes.
And my close friend John Deutsch, who's become so famous, he calls me Throck. And so I don't, you know, I guess I've never really known the protocol, but I suppose the protocol is that those people who go or influence or who use their middle name and their signature actually use that name to by which to be addressed. So I tried that from time to time. And of course, this all came across as being ambivalent, and I was, you know, Burnaby Munson once told me that I didn't know who I was. And I guess he's probably right. So I apologize for the ambivalence, but it's not been very straightforward. But it's a name I've come to appreciate, and of course it's my pen name, and so I'm going to stay with it.
Okay. Some of your publications come out as J.T. Watson.
Oh well, yes, that's I see.
That it's hard to track your record using standard.
I apologize for that. And Klaus Biemann tried to straighten me out on that early on, I know.
Uh-huh.
But I was still struggling with what to do.
Uh-huh.
And, yeah, so I've...
Well...
It's unsettled.
Yeah, obviously it is.
and there's...
Kind of curious because that, you know...
And it's a curiosity for certain.
Yeah.
And it's a uniqueness that I've come to own.
Someone who doesn't know who he is.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, it's a shame.
So we were talking earlier about you left Michigan State around, what, 65? 64, 65?
I mean, MIT, you mean?
Yeah.
I left MIT in 65.
Oh, sorry, I mean, your age wise, when you left Michigan State. About normal retirement age. I was just curious.
Oh, well, so you are talking about Michigan State.
Yeah, the retirement.
So I retired in 2006.
Okay.
So if you want to, you just subtract 1939 from that.
Yeah.
Tell me how old I was.
67.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
But, so they didn't have a mandatory or
no.
Some places do,
and
it gets a little nasty.
Yeah, no. I mean, so long as you have funds, you can stay there as emeritus. They'll probably give you space.
Mm-hmm. So that's
but
that's funds with a FUND, not FUN.
And so, what really well, I guess what brought it to the fore was funding. I had a renewal at about the 2005 or something, and I thought I was doing pretty well, and so I decided, well, I'll give it one more shot, and if I make it, I'll continue to have fun in the lab. But I was having fun. I had excellent postdoc, and I still had a couple of senior graduate students who were excellent. So I did the renewal and submitted it to the study section that had found the previous grant outstanding. I thought I had a dozen or so publications. I thought I was doing okay. What I didn't know was the study section had been heavily transformed from a panel of protein chemists using a variety of analytical techniques to a panel that was almost exclusively X-ray crystallographers who summarily trumped or triaged my grant application and allowed me to exercise one of my two options that I had designed for myself upon submitting the grant, namely that I would either take the money and run, or if I didn't get funded, I would go fishing. So I went fishing. I had a wonderful time in Northern Ontario, Wilderness Lake, fly-in with my brother and cousin. Wonderful time. Shore lunch, walleye over a campfire. Caught a 42-inch northern pike on 8-pound test line with no steel leader. Not a small accomplishment.
Okay, well, so that's...
Do you do any fishing?
I'm not a sportsman. I like being in the woods and hiking, but I've never caught anything.
Oh, so you don't understand what northern pike means. It's like hanging onto an alligator.
Oh, okay.
I mean, these things are vicious.
Uh-huh. It's a challenge.
Oh, unbelievable.
Well, it's kind of a neat switch in careers to, you know, hang up the science career and do some more fun things.
Yeah, well, I had many more fun things on my list that are curtailed.
Yeah, unfortunately. I was looking at your publication list, and I saw that a phrase came up called MRSA, MRSA. Did you guys do any work with this? MRSA is some kind of a super bad bug.
I don't know. I don't understand what you're talking about.
MRSA? It's an antibiotic-resistant... bug that I saw.
I don't remember this. I don't understand what you're talking about.
All right.
Well, is it all? It's on my CV?
No, it's not on your CV. What I did is I extracted your collected your abstracts and did a word search for them and found that there's 9 references to the phrase MRSA, which is usually.
Jeez, I'm sorry. That's embarrassing.
That's not a problem. It's kind of interesting because it's MRSA is this.
So you know what's going on. You're the problem.
I'm the problem. Okay. Well, I've been called a lot of things. I've been called a problem. So what do you think is your most important publication or most important ones of your publications? Or do you have any feeling for anything?
Oh. Well, I think the one that I'm most proud of is the one where I lay out the cyanylation cleavage mass analysis of cleavage products to define the connectivity of cysteines in a disulfide bonded protein.
That's a fairly recent one, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah, I think the principal author name is Wu, W-U.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Are you looking at it?
I'm looking at a list of, I did some, an analysis of your high citation publication, and I'm looking to see if Wu, I see a Wu, a new novel methodology for assignment of disulfide pairing protein.
Yeah, there you go.
1997. Okay.
That sounds right.
Okay.
What is published in what? Protein Science?
Let's see.
Or Analytical Chemistry?
It is published
Yeah.
Novel method is described as same adults have the isoflagellate buds and 14 millisieverts. Yeah, okay. So that is one of the ones that I have listed in my selection of items. The novel protein 1997, that one had 54.
Oh, hits?
Yeah. Oh, wait a second. I get these by bringing that to my sites. Let's do a search here. It had 117 sites.
Well, see, I have never used that algorithm. I have never done a search. I have never done a, whatever the hell it was you did to do that. So, how does that rank?
Among your papers?
Yeah, that is to say, it being cited 197 times.
117.
117?
Yeah.
Is that good?
Well, yeah, for a recent paper, most papers probably don't get cited more than half a dozen times at that much.
Well, I didn't know that even.
Yeah.
It's pretty embarrassing. You know, when I was writing the fourth edition, I was fairly expert with the electronic libraries. I mean, I knew how to use MedChem or whatever the hell it was. What is it? MedPod or what?
PubMed or something like that.
PubMed, yeah. And I knew how to use SciFinder.
Yeah.
I felt so in control. And I had good bibliographies in that. And there are good bibliographies.
Oh, yeah.
In that fourth edition.
Yeah, yeah. No, they are. I was looking at it. They're pretty thorough.
And
that's important. Well, I tell you the thing that I find quite interesting. If you think about this. This business of being able to keep track of citations has only been a recent development. So papers published before about 1995 or 1990, and everything published after that period, somewhere in that range, the citations
dropped substantially.
They're electronically monitored automatically. Okay.
Oh, I see.
If you publish, let's put it this way: you publish a paper in 1970 that got 100 citations. It might show up with 10 because it would only show up in the modern record by people who cited it in the last couple of years.
I see.
And if people cited it in 1971 or 2 or 3 or 4, that would never show up because that's...
out of the window?
Well, it's out of the window of electronically tracking the sites.
Is that right? I see.
So, I mean, in other words...
I didn't know this.
Yeah. But what is impressive to me is this paper that you published in
1997?
No. 1978.
What was that?
Effects of caffeine on plasma renin activity.
Oh, shit. Oh, shit. That's for David Robinson.
This has 121 sites. But this was a paper that was published in 1978, which means the fact that it has 121 sites, it means a lot of people have been citing it in the last 10 or 15 years.
Okay.
So it's got some survivability.
I see.
I don't know whether or not that means anything. Why is there something special about that?
Yeah, that was a kid at Vanderbilt. It's interesting. I don't know what the hell I did to be deserving to be on that thing.
Now, the other early paper is 1975, urinary prostaglandin identification origin. That was cited 48 times. But like you say, that's been cited 48 times in the last 10 years. so it doesn't count all the other citations that occurred from 1975 till 1995.
Well,
and these are, I mean,
so now I this is a good time to tell me the same thing again, I suppose, and that is, that the earlier it was published, the more significant is the number of citations,
or yeah, something. Yeah, and
because it shows.
It shows the fact that that old paper is still being cited today. Because the only way we know that it's being cited that frequently is because it's only in the last 10 years or so that the ACS is able to actually track all the citations to papers electronically. I mean, as you are aware, like with EndNote, managing this stuff's a lot easier, like, you know, with a computer. So it's easy. It's easy for a paper that's published today to electronically find out all the different papers that were cited in that paper that was published. But when you publish this paper in 75, there was no easy way to find out how many times that paper was cited. Unless some person sends there and looks at the literature in its total entirety and finds out how many sites were there that I didn't understand what I'm saying. So,
no.
Well, an old paper cited frequently means it's still being cited by people today. Regardless of how many people may have cited it before, which we don't know.
Yeah.
It's a way for me to try and dig into the meat of your
the importance
research
of,
and
yeah.
find out what it is. And this says what people thought was important about your research. Okay.
Yeah, I guess so.
But I mean, things that you did a long time ago that are still being cited means there's something, you know, something classic to that paper.
Yeah.
Something that people find important and
yes.
And basic in understanding. So there's.
And how do you distinguish those again? What's the criterion?
SciFinder has a SciFinder today, which is the ACS, which is the Chemical Abstracts. For every paper that is in SciFinder or in the Chem Abstracts,
they track independently.
Yeah, how many papers are cited in that publication, and then they do the math. And when I come in here with SciFinder, I use SciFinder. I search on Watson. J's Rock, JT, J whatever.
Oh, jeez. Sorry. Yes, so what a pain.
When I get that list of publications, I can arrange that list according to the number of citations that were made to each of those papers. And then I use that information to try and gain some insight as to what is significant about your body of work. And
I see.
The most highly cited paper is 195 sites, published in 1987, Novel Fragmentation Process of Peptides by Collision-Induced Decomposition in the Tandem Mass Spectrometer, Differentiation of Leucine and Isoleucine.
And is Beeman on that one? Or is that just Stoltz and me?
I have to go. That was published in 87, so I don't think Beeman would be on that one.
Well, I think we yeah, yeah, we were on the Stoltz found this interesting sequence called, which Klaus had also latched onto, was calling them the W ions.
Oh yeah.
And so we finally, I called him up and said, look, we're thinking about publishing this. And he said, well, he says he'd been working on it already. It goes, yeah. So we finally decided to do something jointly.
Okay, let me do a quick.
And Beeman is the principal author.
I'm gonna check.
I'm sorry. I thought it was on what you.
All I got here is Stoltz, John.
Was that an AS? Was that a OMS paper or BMS or?
Medical Environmental Master Contractor.
Oh, that's too bad. Yeah.
So yeah, Klaus is not listed on that one. There is a 1987 paper that Klaus is. Oh wait a minute. Oh, this is here's one in analytical chemistry that Klaus is on. Johnson, Martin, Lehman.
Yeah.
Stelz and Watson. So that was in analytical chemistry in the same year. It looks like it's something in the same title. So
probably it certainly is the same topic.
Yeah. So there's one that I guess you put in biomedical in a slightly different title than one in biomedical environmental master contract. So, well, you already told me what you thought was your most important paper, which I think is listed amongst those that I was able to find. And it was looking at, obviously how people see the body of your work.
Yeah.
Something about what's important in it.
Okay, so the answer to that point is that it was the isoleucine-leucine thing was...
That's one that you said, and that's one of the ones that was most highly cited.
So statistically, that one stands out.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was important. That was the so-called W ions.
Uh-huh.
Oh, man. I used to know how that worked. Oh, man.
Well, do you have any kind of wrap-up?
Oh, shit.
Is there any, what important, do you think is important to the future vitality of
I don't know.
Research and development, or a message to the future, so to speak.
I don't have any. I'm not any good at that.
Not a good prognosticator.
I'm not.
Okay. Well, that's fair.
I'm not a visionary.
So, I do have one other question. And I noticed while I've been here that there's several copies, small pamphlet copies of the Constitution of the United States laying around.
Shit.
I was wondering if you were a constitutional scholar in your retirement.
No. I just opened my mailbox.
Oh, okay. This is stuff that comes in the mail.
Yeah.
Okay.
Who sends that out? Ron Paul or?
Oh, I have no idea.
I think it's Republican or stuff.
Okay. Well, unless you have any other comments or things you want to say, we can wrap this puppy up and
okay.
You can get back to enjoying your retirement here.
Oh, geez, Mike. Well, I got to tell you, I'm certainly flattered by this whole process, by being considered to say something worthwhile, and I can't. So thankfully, you're not videotaping this part.
I say all this is editable, and you'll get a transcript.
Because I don't. I just don't. I just cannot. You know, that's where Chuck Swilly was good. He could envision things.
Uh-huh.
And maybe even Jack Holland could do that, but I can't.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, Grant Cooks is good at that.
Yeah, well, he's into this miniature mass spec business.
Yeah.
He's kind of almost a fanatic about that.
Yeah.
Which I guess is okay. Definitely pushing that whole theme.
Yeah. Well, he's a remarkable guy. And so you surely have interviewed him.
Well, I'd like to put him on. I would like to, but he is not on the list yet.
Well, I can't believe that.
Well, I can't either, but, there's a lot of people out there.
Yeah.
who are worthy of having this little exercise where you sit down and talk about science in your career.
Oh yeah, well, see, you'll get really good answers from a guy like Graham.
Yeah.
Oh man, and I'm just shit. I don't know what's going on.
I think you're being a little too modest there.
Yeah. Well.
All right, I'm going to push the button that says we're done.
Oh.